Hey there, Fat Joy listeners. Did you know there's a mental health practice in Canada that is specifically for fat folks? Tend and Cultivate Counseling was created by and for fat people. It's a place that offers non-stigmatizing fat-centric mental health care, whether you want to talk about your body or not. They specialize in body trust, self-compassion, body liberation, eating disorders, relationships, sex, pleasure, and trauma. So if you're looking for mental health care that understands the complexities of navigating life in a fat body, head to tendandcultivate.com/fatjoy. Or you can give episode 57 of the Fat Joy podcast a listen to hear my interview with their founder, Dawn Sarah. My partner and I actually worked with Dawn and got some really helpful relationship support when we needed it. And good news, they see clients outside of Canada too. Fat Mental Health Matters and Tend and Cultivate Counseling is here to support you. Get the website link in this episode show notes to tendandcultivate.com/fatjoy and prioritize your mental health. Hello, lovelies. Welcome to the Fat Joy podcast, where we talk each week about how to flourish in an anti-fat world. I'm Sophia Apostle, a fat professional coach who loves talking to other fat people about what it's like to live within oppressive systems that marginalize our bodies and how we still dare to have the audacity and courage to reach towards our collective liberation and embrace our joy. Please know this is an adult content podcast, so there will be swears, we will be talking about harms we've experienced, and we will be rebelling against weight stigma, diet culture, fat phobia, ableism, racism, etc. You can get more Fat Joy goodness, including how you can support the podcast, through my newsletter at fatjoy.substack.com. And for episode transcripts, book reviews, and show notes, head to the Fat Joy website at fatjoy.life. I am so glad you're here. Enjoy this episode. Hello, lovelies. Welcome back to the Fat Joy podcast. I'm Sophia. And with me today, I have Heather Mader and Allie Kite. Welcome to you both. Hello.
Hello.
So Heather and Allie, I've just been getting to know, but have really admired what they have co-conspired on creating. And we're going to talk all about that in this episode. But first, why don't we get to know them? So Allie, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, thank you so much, Sophia, for having me. My name's Allie. Me and my mini Australian shepherd dog, Penley, are trying to change the world. I am an engineer by training. So I grew up in Atlanta and did my undergraduate in biomedical engineering there, which is where I started forming the idea for this device that we're going to talk about today. And now I'm wrapping up my PhD at Stanford in medical device development and been building Tina Healthcare along the way.
That's amazing, Allie. Also, I used to live in Georgia. I lived in Milledgeville. Did you ever hear of Milledgeville before?
That sounds very familiar. Is it like outside the perimeter, OTP?
A little bit, yeah. It was about an hour and a half away from Atlanta. It's close to Macon, but we would come into Atlanta. I'm in Toronto, but my family we moved to Georgia for some reason. My parents wanted to escape winter, I think. So that's fun that you're from there, but I'm not hearing an accent. Allie, where's the accent?
I know. I do think Atlanta is like some microcosm. It's like not South.
Yeah.
I could also attribute it to my whole family's from Ohio. And I grew up, you know, in a household with no accents.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. All right. Thanks, Allie. It's so nice to get a sense of you. We're going to talk way more about all the brilliance that you are creating in the world. Heather, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Gosh, I'm more creative. I don't have all of those, you know, accolades, but I am a chef. I'm a full-time chef and I run a personal chef and catering company and a full-time artist. So I really have two jobs. I'm also going to school right now for energy work. So I do have that's really my whole life. But you can pretty much find me on social media. Heather Mader Art is where I'm at, YouTube and Instagram, and that's where I am if you want to know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, and Heather, tell us a little bit about your art. Like what type of art do you do?
I do mostly abstracts. abstract acrylics right now, but really I'm mixed media. I've done everything from pour painting and I kind of skip genres from month to month. I can't really stay in one place. I'm a really creative person. So I'm into definitely a creative individual. So that's kind of my thing.
Oh, so cool. Yeah, I've definitely looked at your Instagram and your art is so beautiful.
Thank you.
And as a chef, do you find like being a chef is really creative or is it more about like rigor? I always feel like chefs have rigor.
Well, we do. I mean, you do have to, but because of what I do, which is personal chefing, it requires a lot of creativity. Each client is different. Every single client I have to cater to specifically their needs, their health goals, their palate, their lifestyle, like all of those things. I've been doing it for 22 years or something. So it's a long, I love my jobs.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Heather, I've always thought if I ever won the lottery, the first thing I do would be to like get a personal chef. Like
me too.
Yeah, you too.
Yes.
That's amazing.
That's so cool that you've got both of those creative outlets. And also, I feel like now added to your resume, what we're going to explore together is like voice of the people, voice mm-hmm. of the fab people. Mm-hmm. But before we go there, my second question for my guests is always about your relationship to the word fat, your journey with this word, what this word has meant to you. So Heather, how has this word kind of gone through, had a through line through your life?
Well, you know, it's one of those things that it's changed and shifted over the years. You know, it used to be a huge disparaging, heart-wrenching comment, and people would say the rudest things. And we could do a whole, you know, podcast on stories to tell about, you know, experience. But now in my life, you know, I'm 50. I own this. This is who I am. I'm a big person. And it's kind of like, if that's all you got on me, then I'm good. You know what I'm saying? Like with the way that I live my life, I feel I'm pretty genuine. And if that's probably all you're going to get on me. So I'm okay with it. So I've owned it. I totally, completely feel, yeah, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is at this point.
Do you remember when that journey started for you, like when it started to change, where the word was like when did you start this kind of reclamation of the word?
Oh yeah, the empowerment part. Yes, I would say, you know, in your mid-30s, I mean, in my mid-30s for me, it took a while. You know, some people just don't care, but it took a long time. I remember being, you know, hurt by that comment in my 20s, my early 30s. And then, I don't know, something just changed. Maybe it's just getting older or understanding your own power or, you know, claiming the things that are yours. I just started to do that and it really shifted.
Yeah. Oh, I love that, Heather. Yeah, I found that too in my like early to mid 30s. And now I'm getting into my mid 40s and I'm like, fuck it all. Like, I dare you say something. Like, it is actually just really liberating to get older.
It is.
And I think there's a privilege with that, like the privilege to not have to care too much about what other people think.
Yes. You know, I mean, you just get to a point where you just honor yourself. I'm honoring who I am in every aspect of my life and really embracing who I am. And at that point, there's really not a lot that other people can say to hurt you.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I love that too, that every aspect of my life, like what I hear in there is so much like intentionality and choice. Like I'm mm-hmm. designing my life the way mm-hmm. I want to live it. Yeah. That's inspiring. Thanks, Heather. Now, Allie, you are my first non-fat person to be on the podcast, so welcome.
Thank you. I'm honored.
Yay, I'm glad you're here. I just to share with people listening who know that normally it's only fat people and sharing their stories and centering their voices, I'm very excited to have you on because I feel like and again, we'll talk more about this in a minute, but I just want to set context for people that the way you as a non-fat person collaborated, co-designed, listened to Heather a fat person and had and a real impact was made on the design of this accessory is, in my experience, if people know of other experiences, please tell me. But in my experience, it's really, really rare. And so I really view you as a fat ally. I'm excited to kind of showcase the impact that that has for everybody who's going to use this product. So Ali, if I were to ask you about the word fat, do you have a history or relationship with this word? What's it like for you?
I do. And it was actually really enlightening for me to reflect on this, because I didn't connect these two parts of my life until this moment, or as I was thinking about this question. But I thought it would be helpful to go through, my experience with the word fat and my experience with how I thought about my body growing up and how that's changed and been affected by fat phobia in the world. So I distinctly remember this moment, but I grew up playing soccer, so I was an athlete. Food and my body was like a vehicle to play the game well. Like, I ate so that I would perform well. My body, the way I assessed my body was how well I could run and how well I could recover. And I felt so strong and powerful. And that's just how I thought about food and my body in that context. And when I went to college, I stopped playing soccer and I started to hear things and see things around me that really caused me to think and pause. So a lot of people were talking about the freshman 15 and everyone was absolutely terrified of gaining weight. People were talking about diets and I thought, oh, I've been doing this food thing wrong. Like, apparently I'm supposed to care a lot about like how I eat and how my body looks. And I was like, oh my, holy shit, I've been wrong. So I started, you know, I downloaded my Fitness Pal. I got a scale and I started just like hyper correcting everything. And the thing I knew how to do was like work really hard. So I started exercising all the time, eating just not enough food, and then trying to get validation externally from the world about how that was the right thing to do. Clearly that just spiraled and there ended up being an intervention from my friends and my family, and I had to leave school and enter into an eating disorder program.
Oh gosh, Ali, that went really far for you.
It went very far.
Wow. Oh, I'm so sorry that happened.
I'm sure you all can speak to this, like your experiences around learning to accept your body has formed who you are as people. And I would say that's true for me too. Like, I fully enjoyed and loved, you know, after a few weeks of getting used to it, that program, because it taught me about how to develop body neutrality, how to listen to my body. Like, my body is so smart. It knows what it wants better than I do. So me trying to force a way to eat or whatever. So I guess when, just to circle back to that original question, what did it mean to me? Fat was something that I associated with fear and like wrongness. And through that program, I've learned that it is just what it is. It's like my hair color. My body's just my body. You know? And again, I didn't connect what I've done with Tina with that experience, but I think it's always been there. And part of what I've been trying to do is like leverage my skills to help other people learn to be in this world, even when society is creating products that don't allow you to be or try to tell you that you shouldn't be. And so a long-winded answer of what that word means to me.
No, it's beautiful. Wow. I love that you didn't connect those things together until, because it does, it feels like what you've created, the product that we're going to talk about is really does come from a place of empathy. Mm. And I wonder if your experiences really kind of helped with that.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that with us, Ali. All right, so let's talk about what did get created. So, Ali, you are the, would it be CEO and founder? Would I use both words for you? Yeah, of Tina Healthcare. And I hope the first of many products you've created, the first one is a tampon insertion device. So, Ali, can you tell us a little about, like, I still have a two-part question. One is, what drove you to create Tina? And then why tampon insertion accessory as the first product? So let's start with what had you create Tina? What was the gap that you were seeing?
Sure. It actually started with a tampon.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. Start there.
So the thesis of Tina and how I stumbled upon this was actually a design class I was taking as an undergraduate at Georgia Tech. It was a medical device design class where we had to find a medical need, scope the problem, and then develop a solution. And I just really hated tampons. I used them all the time, but they sucked. And I struggled throughout my whole life to do it right and comfortably. And from an engineering perspective, it's a pretty simple thing. It's just some plastic in a cotton ball. So it wasn't super intimidating in that respect. And as an early engineer, it seemed like a tractable problem I could solve. And so really that started it. And it was really when I started looking into what other people's problems were with tampons that I began to uncover sort of the massive gaps that this product wasn't touching. And for me, I remember sitting in the dorm at Georgia Tech Googling pain with tampons, and I stumbled upon this forum, and it was a forum for people with spinal cord injuries.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a thread specifically that said, tampons help? ? So I clicked on that thread, and people were saying, it was this girl actually specifically that had said, before my injury, I used to use tampons all the time, but now I have C6, C7 tetraplegia, and I lack dexterity in my hands, but I can't sit on a pad because I'm in a wheelchair and I'll get an infection or it interferes with my catheter. And, you know, what do you guys do? And the responses were, my boyfriend inserts them for me. I've induced menopause with Depo-Provera, which is a hormone, but even though that risks bone density loss. Or I got a hysterectomy. So I literally removed my uterus and sacrificed my ability to have a family at this pivotal time in my life just because this device didn't work for me.
Okay, so now I have tears because of rage. Tears of rage. That was it. That was like, these are our options, women or people with uteruses. Like, seriously.
It's so heartbreaking to hear the story. This is the first time I'm hearing this story, so I'm pretty moved as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't look at that and not do anything about it.
Ugh. Yeah.
And then I realized that these struggles trumped my struggles, and I'll talk about that in a second, about how actually designing for the more severe use cases facilitates greater usability for everyone. But that was the moment, me sitting in that dorm and stumbling upon that thread, where I committed to doing something about it. And I spent the next year, leveraged all the resources that I could at Georgia Tech to try to build something that worked. It was also, and I'm sure both of you as like ambitious people wanting to achieve things can resonate with this, but I also wanted to prove that I could build something and do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just a super fun experience. And there was a lot of iterating, and I ended up creating what I've named Tina, which stands for tampon insertion accessory. So the name isn't random. It's a little bit of an acronym. And the idea is that it just clips onto tampons and makes them easier to use. And again, it was specifically designed for the spinal cord injury population. So I was prioritizing features that minimize dexterity. So imagine, and I would simulate these use cases by taping my hands or putting splints on my wrist and making sure that the device still worked. And as you know, tampons require a significant amount of dexterity. And there were innovations to enable people to use forks and knives and pencils, but not tampons, which is crazy. And Tina was born in that capacity. And what was really striking was when I started talking about Tina online, or just looking for people to test the device, posts here and there on social media, so many people reached out to me that weren't actually part of the original target design population. People of all abilities, of all body types, of all sizes were telling me, hey, I actually struggle to insert tampons, or I could never get it right, or I can't reach. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
This might be something very, very useful beyond just the original market we thought. Maybe this is more than a class project. Maybe this is a real thing that deserves to be out in the world. And that was the second aha moment for me, where it deserved more than just being made. It deserved the creation of a vehicle or in a way to scale it up and enable people to actually be able to buy it and use it. And that's when we decided to incorporate and create the actual company. And yes, we've started with tampons, but there's so many more things, and menstrual and otherwise, that deserve at least another look.
Yeah. Yeah. Allie, I'm going to ask you to enrage everyone listening further by talking about the history of tampons and how, you know, I don't want to give away a spoiler, but basically how kind of little it took to make it better, which of course smacks of massive misogyny and like ignoring women's bodies completely. So Allie, make us mad. Make us so mad.
But and that was the other thing when I was looking into problems with tampons, of course I wanted to look at, you know, history. Like, well, what have other people done? Shockingly, nothing.
Nothing.
The tampon was invented, you know, the modern tampon with the telescoping actuator or applicator, sorry, this guy looks exactly the same as the patent that Dr. Earl Haas submitted in 1930.
Exactly
the same.
Wow.
Like getting close to 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, mm-hmm. Enraged.
I was looking at, this is so funny. I've been like looking at other period products or other things you insert in your vagina over the course of your life. And one of them is a pessary.
Remind me what that is.
I kid you not. Despite like a simple material change, it looks like exactly the same thing that people used in 200 BC.
Whoa. What's a pessary? Tell me what that word is.
Sorry. A pessary is like a disc that you insert in your vagina that puts some pressure on the urethra to deal with incontinence.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. And nothing's changed since 200 BC.
Well, they've made it silicone instead of, it was like rock.
Oh, God.
So like, I'm glad that's changed, but like the design is the same.
Wow.
Oh my God. Okay. Yes. Heather, are you enraged? I'm enraged.
I'm just amazed. I'm shocked, but I'm not, because this is where we, like anything that has to do with the female body, it doesn't get spoken about, whether it's everything from periods to menopause, you know, to incontinence. I just noticed that if it doesn't have to do with a man, it doesn't change. You know, I just saw this thing actually where, you know, a man can actually technically could produce, you know, 365 babies in a year, but a woman could only really produce one, but yet we're focused on female contraception. Isn't that funny?
Oh, so funny. Yeah.
Hilarious. So,
hilarious. Right? Oh my gosh. For everyone listening, if you have a chance, go to Tina's Instagram, and they've got these amazing, I love that you guys do this, this amazing like tampon ads from like of yore, and they are ridiculous. And again, really focusing on, you know, you don't want your man to be upset. Like, it's that kind of, oh my God, I can't even. But it's so interesting to see, like, how we have been talking about menstruation, our periods, our vulvas, our vaginas over the decades, and really nothing being done about it. So Heather, I want to ask you, what has your relationship been with your period using tampons? Like, what resonated for you about what Tina is doing?
Well, first of all, I guess the story is I've always had heavy periods, really heavy, like the kind where, you know, you're changing it every hour or so. So it's always been an issue. I haven't always been this size. I've been heavy my whole life. But, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you look back when you were like 16 and you're like, I'd like to be that size again. You know, but so I haven't always been this size. But as I got bigger and, you know, also I developed lymphedema. So those two conditions really made inserting tampons really frustrating for me. And I started getting to the point where I just couldn't do it.
Heather, can you tell people what lymphedema is, just in case they don't know?
Yeah, it's a disorder of the lymphatic system. So swelling, like lymph fluids collects in certain places in the body. And it can be caused by all sorts of things. I had primary lymphedema, so even I remember even being younger and having it in my legs, but really we didn't really get diagnosed until later in life. So, you know, in other words, I have a lot of tissue and fluid and stuff, you know, and so it just became really complicated for me to insert a tampon, which actually, if you really are a heavy bleeder, you need one. You need both. You need a backup, and, you know, you wear a pad and then you need a backup. So what happened was pretty soon I was unable to do that. And then I was like, you know, stuffing towels down there, like to leave the house so I could leave the house for a couple of hours. It really inhibited my social life, just all this stuff. So I met this wonderful man and we started a relationship. And when he saw what I was struggling with, he said, "I got you, girl."
Oh, yay, wonderful man.
And he's like, "I got you, girl." And he's like, you know, and so we used to make a little game of it, and he was wonderful. And so anyway, and then I went through this period, this magical little period where I had someone helping me, and it was this huge weight like lifted off of me. Like I just felt so much freedom, you know, to be able to move about the cabin, you know, of life. And okay, so then we broke up after 8 years. So I had a long period of time of really feeling this freedom. When we broke up, you know, aside from the heartbreak of a breakup and everything, I just had this sinking moment when I got my period, and I was like, oh, and this is where I get emotional. A loss. Yeah. And I thought that I cannot be the only one. Like, I can't be the only one. So I got on Google and I thought they make accessory devices for every, like aids, accessory aids for everything. Why is this not a thing? So I got on Google and I said tampon aid. And do you know that there was like only 2 Google results? Do you know how hard that is to get Google results with only like 2 or 3 results? So I was like, what? I felt like I had stumbled on some new amazing, like, this is impossible, 2 Google results. And one of them was Tina. And I was like amazed. And so I clicked on it and you couldn't buy it yet. And I was like, what the hell? so bummed out, but I contacted the company and I told them, you know, as soon as it's available, you know, I want that thing. So that's how I came acquainted with the company in the beginning, was just like that need for that, to fill that void of that loss of that freedom for me.
Oh yeah. So yeah. Heather, I so relate to this. I have fibroids and endometriosis. And when it was bad, before I found a medication that worked, like literally I didn't leave the house for 2 years. And it was so, yeah, it's so isolating. And I basically like lived on the toilet. I would have like a call with a client, rush to the bathroom, new pad. Like, I love that you mentioned, like, you need to double up pad, tampon. And like, I mean, again, anyone listening, this is probably not the episode for you if you're squeamish, but like chunks of stuff coming out of me, a pad can't handle that. No period underwear can handle that. Like, a tampon really is necessary. So until I can, you know, like pull it out, let it drain, insert a new one, like for real. And it's not talked about. It's not explored. And I so feel that, like, the loss of, oh shit, now what am I going to do? Like that moment. Oh, I really felt that, Heather. Thank you for sharing that. I think a lot of people listening are going to relate. I mean, endometriosis affects 1 in 10, fibroids, I think it's around that same number. Also PCOS.
Mm-hmm. I have both of those. Endometriosis, I have fibroids. And so I'm sure. And yeah, it literally, I just kept thinking, can I really be the only person experiencing this? This is not, because no one else is talking about it. Why? Like, and you don't really realize what other people go through until you share your story. That's one thing I've noticed. And when you share your story, then, you know, you get to connect with other people. And that was one of the reasons why I don't like necessarily be on camera, but this is so important. And I think the work that Tina is doing, and Allie, I'm like, just, I love everything about your company. So that's why I'm here.
Oh, yay. Yeah, right. Well, and so, Allie, I think it's so incredible that the original concept for Tina was for people with spinal cord injuries. And you said something that I want to circle back to, because I feel like this is what anti-oppression work is rooted in, which is when we design for the most vulnerable, everyone benefits. So even though it was for body injuries, like as my size has fluctuated, and also too, again, as I'm aging, as I have various injuries, sometimes my back goes out, sometimes my knee is sore. The flexibility required for me to insert a tampon varies. Oh God, especially early morning when I'm all stiff. I'm like, oh, this is really hard.
That's and a
I'm
real
like,
thing.
It's a real thing. And it's like, I shouldn't have to feel like almost dehumanized by not being able to take care of the natural blood process that is moving through my body. And it's so, I'm just so glad that this also then, you know, and we'll talk about this in a second, how you two work together, but how this has been designed to work for many different body types. So Heather, you reached out to the company, you're like, hey, hook me up. And then, so I imagine you got sent.
Yeah. So I got this crazy device and I was like, oh my gosh. But honestly, there was nothing in the world that would have stopped me from figuring out how to use this thing. Like, I was absolute. I mean, it was like, you know, the sky opened up and the angels started to sing and everything. And I felt extremely determined to figure out how to use it, because I did have a little bit of an issue with my personal body. And I don't know if you want me just to talk about that or...
If you would love to. I think it's a great example of, again, your voice being heard. Yeah.
So this is the way Tina comes. This is the prototype, by the way. I don't know. I'm hoping you guys can all see this on camera.
Yeah,
this-
and for people listening, it kind of looks like it's basically, it's plastic. Actually, Allie, do you want to describe? Because you probably have described this many times.
Yeah, it's like a... It's an overmolded plastic. So it's there's like some rigid components, but then it has like elastomer features to make it soft to the touch.
Just really soft right here.
Yes. Yeah. And there's like a little 45 degree angle coming up that helps. Honestly, the easiest way to describe this is we actually modeled the infrastructure to be like vibrators. The sex toy industry has done a lot of work on like what is the best ergonomics for reaching this position. And so we just copied that. I think that also helps.
Yeah, the visual.
Visualize it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. I love knowing that.
So she sent me that and I was like, what the heck? But you know, it works. And here's the thing, you know, you put your, I'm just going to put like this so you can see, but you put your hand through this little loop and then this part, you know, goes up against your body. But here's the thing, I have a lot of tissue, you know, a lot of goodness, we'll say, down there. And the tampon gets inserted into this place right here. And when I would put it in and try to insert it, it kept falling out.
Yes. I think I would have that same problem.
Right. So I was like, no. I mean, I can't tell you how much determination I had. I was like, no. So I tried taping it. But then obviously you need that a little bit of give. And you can't actually obstruct this part. So I found that I just put a rubber band around it like this. And I just kept it pushing. And then it works perfectly with this motion. It works perfectly. And it took a few times. I'm not going to lie. It definitely took a few times. There's a few times I got frustrated in the beginning. But it's just like anything else. After you get over the learning curve, then it's just really easy. And it gives you that extra length that you wish your fingers had when you're doing that. You don't have to have that crazy dexterity. You know how tampons get really slippery and then you're like, this is hard, you know, and you don't have to deal with that, like the whole thing. So then when Tina contacted me to ask how everything was going, I told them my little MacGyver tip, you know, advice. And I think that the new version I could see, because I actually, this is how it comes now in this pretty little box, like, you know. And remember when we put up with the BS period products for 100 years? That's what it says on here, which I love all of your marketing. It's so amazing. And then now it comes in this beautiful, I haven't even looked at this. This is my first time opening.
It's an unboxing.
It comes with this pretty purple pouch. I did say something about the color. I was like, y'all got to change the color.
It was black before.
Now this looks like a torture device or some kind of weird, you know, like dominatrix sex toy. I don't know. It has to be a little more feminine. But, oh, it is too. Look. Oh. That's beautiful.
Yeah. So now it's kind of a light and dark purple. It actually looks really lovely.
It's really pretty. And look, here's my little band.
Oh, amazing.
Right around here. Aw, thanks, wow. Guys.
That's so great. I love that.
That is cool.
So Allie, what was it like for you to have Heather give that feedback, be in this process, try it out? What was that like for you?
Transparently, I was actually really nervous. It's very scary to give away this product. I was so afraid that, you know, Heather would be like angry or upset. And I'm so grateful that you're willing to like work with us and provide feedback. Like that was so key to the development of this product. And I was like, wow, I can't believe I was nervous. Like this is how this is supposed to work. We would have never known that. And like literally, Heather, when I saw that video and we heard about this, we went and changed the mold. Like we do an injection mold where you like carve out steel that you inject the plastic in. So it forms like the actual foundation of the product. We went and changed that. We told our designer, we were like, you need to make this. Because basically what happens is like your body's putting a little bit of torque on the end of that, pushing it out. So we're like, we need that to grip stronger so it's less susceptible to the torque. And then we need some sort of like band. And we went and did it because we got that feedback. And that feels so special to me, and I'm so grateful for it. And as you were talking, Heather, we've struggled to think about what to call it. So we've been calling it like the Holder Band. And I realize now we should have called it the Heather Band.
Yes. Call it the Heather Band.
Yes. Yes, let's do it.
So I was like, whoa, it's totally the Heather Band. But, but the, it just, yeah, I've learned to like let go of that feeling of fear and like trust others and trust people like Heather that we can do this together. And I think that's been the problem with what's been built today is they're prescribing how other people's bodies should work with a product. And if it doesn't, then your body is wrong.
Oh my God. Say that again, Allie. Say it again.
Prescribing how the product should work with your body. And if it doesn't, then your body is wrong.
Right.
Oh. Amen. Amen.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And what you're saying is actually, let's just design it for the body and not make bodies wrong.
Right. And I think that will come with a little bit of like trial and error with Heather, like what Heather experienced. And I know that it's going to occur because everybody's body and experience is so different. But I really do believe now that that's okay. And it's part of the process and that we need to be intentional about integrating that.
I'm imagining like versions of Tina where it's like the Heather, which has the band for torque, and then maybe like the Sophia, for example, I don't know, that is like built differently. Because I imagine there are commonalities of bodies that need things a little bit different. Like maybe the length needs to be longer for some people. Maybe the, like I can just imagine different, almost like, yeah, different styles, almost having like, oh, are you like this kind of body? Or, you know, is this what your vulva looks like? Or try this one. It feels like that level of able to differentiate is going to help accessibility. So really, truly, assistive devices then become assistive devices.
Uh-huh. I was just going to say, you know, in that same line of thinking, I've already referred Tina to a single dad who has two daughters. So I don't know about your first experience, but my first experience was me in a bathroom stall in the pool, in the swimming pool with some lady like telling me through the door, like how to insert it. My mom didn't show me. No one showed me. Your friends tried to tell you, you know, and there I am. And I'm like, I think I got it. And then I went out to swim. And then like 10 minutes later, I saw it floating on the top of the swimming
pool. Oh no. Floating tampon.
I'm like, so, you know, I still get embarrassed, but you know, this is like what young women are facing. Like, it's not something even the coolest parent can't really show you, and definitely not a father, you know. So to have a father that'd be able to give this device to his daughter and say, you know, here, this is what you do. And it's really, it is more self-explanatory than I'm sure what I was doing in this bathroom stall of this, you know, local pool. So I think there's so many applications across the board that were, you know, that haven't even been considered. I mean, that have been considered, but you know, I'm sure it's still going to be a revealing of itself, you know?
Yeah. I'll share my version of that is I used to coach Special Olympics swimming. So I had people with lots of different bodies, lots of different developmental abilities and disabilities. And one of our swimmers was so excited. We had a meet coming up, but she got her period and she has Down syndrome. And so her arms, she could not reach herself to put the tampon in. And her mom, so I was in my early 20s at this point. I was not the liberated woman that you see before you now. But she came to me and asked, you know, could you put my daughter's tampon in? And I just remember being like, I have no idea how to handle this conversation. I barely know how to put mine in. Like, it was such, and ultimately, I think, you know, I think I said no. I may have consulted the head coach. I don't remember exactly the details, but basically she couldn't come and compete because it was an away meet and no one would be able to help her. And like, I'm just imagining if she had a Tina device and had been able to practice with it, she could have like met her own body's needs and not had to miss out. Cause for me, one of the most enraging things about, and I'll speak specifically about fat bodies is that we often have to miss out on life. Like, oh, I can't go to this comedy show because my bum can't fit in the seats and they don't have accessibility seating. Great. I miss out. It's just constant missing out. And I think about that example all the time of how I wish I had been able to find a solution for this swimmer. Again, it's like 25 years ago now, and I'm still thinking about this one incident where someone missed out on something that was really important to them because of their body. So, yeah.
So, Allie, I bet you feel so, don't you feel so amazing? I'm so proud of you.
Yeah.
Like, so proud.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And this is like, these conversations are so energizing and reaffirming and validating. And I'm like happy to speak to this, Sophia, but there's a lot of corners of the world where this product is not super well received, or what I'm trying to do is not very well received.
Tell us why. Name it. Can you name it?
Okay, so there are a couple of instances where I get a lot of backlash, and I think your entire podcast speaks to why this might occur. But as an example, like when we started doing early ads about Tina on Facebook, we had people go out of their way to fat shame.
Oh, sure.
Gosh, so annoying.
And I mean, the thing about the Facebook algorithm is it then would say, oh, these types of people are interacting with the post. We will now show this post to more people with them. And so then there's this shit, like, and so then we had to cancel the ads, but I was just shocked that it, you know, we in women's health, we talk about like fragile masculinity. I think there's also like a fragile slenderness. I don't.
Yeah.
But people who see people accepting their bodies as like an attack on something.
Yes.
Yeah. And
thin fragility.
Fragility. Yeah. And so that's been tough for us to navigate. On the other side of the coin is in the business world, where I've tried to pitch Tina, you know, for opportunities for funding as well as other competitions. This was especially true at Georgia Tech, which maybe because it was in the South, but I distinctly remember pitching this at a business competition and we had to stop because they didn't know how the tampon was going to stay in the body.
Hang on, just in general, they didn't understand
that. They're like, so how does the cotton stay up there?
What?
What? Oh my God.
Like, I remember that distinctly and being like,
oh.
I feel sorry for your wives and daughters. Like,
yeah.
And then just people just have this like aversion to wanting to talk about menstrual health, but especially when that intersects with disabilities and fat bodies. It's like a double whammy that people, and then they make all these excuses like, oh, that's not a big enough market size, or that's not this or this. And I mean, that's just false.
It's bullshit.
Yeah, I don't believe it. There is a huge, in fact, the market size for this product is huge. It's multifaceted. This is not just for fat people. This is not just for new women on new young ladies on their period. It's not just for the disabled. Like, there is so many people that could use this product across the board. So no, it's because it's uncomfortable for people to talk about their menstruation, and it's been subversed for so long, you know?
Absolutely. Well, and Allie, I was really curious what it was going to be like for you out there pitching and trying to get funding, because already, you know, women it's been a little while since like the stats. I used to be a little more involved in entrepreneurial type work, but I think the last stats I saw, it was something like 2% of all like VC venture capital money goes to women. And then now you're, you know, talking about an unpalatable product. How dare you, Allie?
So spicy.
So how are you? So what are you finding? Like, are you going angel investors? Like, how are you going to keep this company going? Because we need it to go.
I know. We have a little bit of runway. We're going to be bootstrapping. And then my hope is to find the right, maybe it's angels, maybe it's e-commerce investors who see the opportunity in this space. One thing that I do think is true, unfortunately, is that unlike other startups that can maybe get funding before they have any traction, I think we're going to have to show data. I think we're going to have to show, oh, people need this and they're using it and they like it and this is sustainable. And that's okay with me. So I think that's our plan. I believe in the product and I believe we can get there. And so our goal is to execute for the next couple of months. I think earlier this morning, we just got notification from our fulfillment center that Tina is in warehouse and shipping.
Yay! Amazing. Amazing.
All of the pre-orders to date will be fulfilled in the next couple of days. And then it will be open, like direct order, shipped to your home, wherever you're shipping it to. So our plan is to just do that really well and talk to people like Heather who might have different experiences, see how that informs new product development and features, and then start thinking about like what other things can we adopt Tina for?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like this should be in drugstores. Like this to me is a no-brainer. This should just be right beside the tampons.
I agree. And also, you know, doctors at rehab facilitation centers should be recommending these to their patients. I mean, this is like I could just see so many places that this could be recommended. But anyway, you got my 100% endorsement, you know, on my social media, I'm an artist, but I'm totally willing to go on and talk about this. We could do it in, you know, on my Instagram, my YouTube, Facebook. Well, so how is that working with Facebook? Does it just shut everything down or?
We've figured it out. We have like a really excellent ad experimenter who knows how to work. So we're just optimizing our retargeting and targeting people that aren't going to comment rude, awful things. Part of the problem was I was running the ads last time and I had no idea what I was doing. Mm. So we've gotten a lot better traction with Facebook now and surprisingly TikTok.
Yeah. I feel like TikTok would be great for this. Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. It's so impressive. It's so impressive that against all odds, against all history, all misogyny, that this is able to be created and going to be shared around. And I wish so much success for this, Allie. I think it's, even if nothing, like, I just think, I don't know. So here's my problem. I've built up my world as a bit of a bubble. Like I really only hang out with people who are liberated. And then so every time it's like, oh yeah, people on Facebook were like so upset. People don't understand how tampons stay inside of people's bodies. I'm like, who are these people? Like I forget that there is like a whole other, you know, people who don't know all these things, who are still very much in taboo topic land. In my mind, there is no taboo topic, but I hope that this is able to reach some of those people and help them. And I feel like that's really the snowball effect that is going to happen because it is super useful for many, as Heather has pointed out. I want to ask you the final question that I always ask all my guests, which is about joy. I always joke that we've raged the whole time, although we did talk a little bit about joy. But now I want to just invite you both to share with us, as it feels good to you, like, how do you invite joy into your life? Do you have practices? Do you just make space for it? Like, what does joy even mean to you? So Heather, do you want to start?
Joy. There's so many things. And I think my vision of joy over the years has also changed. You know, the things that used to be joyful to me, a lot of external things. And now it's a lot of internal things for me. Painting, obviously, because it's something I love. And I try to find joy in the little simple things in life, because life is really complicated. It can be really oppressive, and there's so many, you know, it sometimes you have to really search like little tiny things to be in gratitude over. I find myself sometimes it's as small as, God, I got up today. You know, like I got up out of bed today, or it could be just a drive through the country with my friends. It could be just a really delicious cup of coffee. It could be just watching the sunset. I mean, I know these sound like kind of trite, but actually I do believe that that's where the heart of all joy comes from, is just like the really simple things in life. So that's really where I pull a lot of my joy from.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. I don't think it's trite at all. I agree with all of those. It's beautiful. Thank you, Heather. And Allie, what about you? What's your joy?
And I think I resonate with a lot of those things, finding it, but also being very intentional about enjoying the little things. I think there are some times where the little things happen and they pass by, but I truly access the joy when I reflect on it in the moment and I notice it happening and I'm mindful. And frankly, I'm actively working on doing that. It's not natural for me. The other place I find joy is who I surround myself with. So my number one, I was going to say person, but it's a dog.
I think they're interchangeable.
The Australian Shepherd. I learn a lot from her in terms of like mindfulness and existing and just being unconditionally loving and happy. And I know there's science about if you pet your dog, you're literally releasing happy hormones in your body. And I visualize that when I pet her. So she's certainly number one, but I'm also very intentional about who I spend my time with. And like Heather, that has changed over the years because I learned how much it affects me. And so I find joy in grabbing a cup of coffee and having a coffee chat with one of my coworkers or, you know, a friend, and hearing about their life and their day and providing support where needed. That fills me up. That fills up my cup.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Inspiring others too. I think that's a huge thing. You know, all three of us can kind of resonate with that. We have to be creators, inspiring others to feel good.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's reciprocal, right? It's the reciprocity piece that I think is so powerful too. Yeah. You both are incredible people and doing incredible work in the world. And so I just want to thank you for coming on the podcast and sharing about that. Of course, there will be links to Tina and Heather's artistry will be in the links as well. So everyone listening, please check them out. Tina is ready to be ordered. So if you're curious, definitely check it out. And then I don't know, Allie, should they email you? Should they email the company? Let you guys know how it is to get that data so you can get that money?
Yeah, well, we'll have like many touch points where you can engage and give feedback.
Amazing. Good. Amazing.
Sophia, thank you so much for this like opportunity, because I love what you're doing with your podcast as well. And, you know, bringing kindness, compassion, empathy to a community of people. We get a lot of haters, you know, especially, you know, being a content creator on social media. I totally understand what it's like. I get them every single day. So thank you for the work that you're doing to lift us up.
Well, thanks, Heather. Yeah. Oh, so much love. I love it. All right. Thank you both.
Before we go, I'd like to read a poem because poetry can reach our hearts in a different way. Poems can have us feel in a different way. And that's what this podcast is all about. Expanding our hearts, deepening our empathy, and inviting in joy. So each week, you get a new poem.
For this episode with Heather and Allie, I've chosen the poem Never Alone by Kaveri Patel because the poet is describing the world she'd like to see. And I feel like Allie and Heather and Tina Healthcare are helping to create a world that they would like to see. So here's the poem. I want kindness, the kind that makes you want to take all the horror movies and burn them in a great big bonfire on the beach under a full moon. No werewolves, only brave stars to witness the end of dramatic fear. I want kindness, the kind that makes you pull out your last $20 bill for the person holding up a sign, specific words to their story, too long, too precious for a dingy 4x4 piece of cardboard. But most of all, I want self-compassion to be the new drug, more popular than Lipitor or Lexapro, unclogging arteries hardened by inflammatory judgments, balancing seesaw perspectives weighed down with worry, one hand taking hold of the other, reminding you you're never alone.
Thank you for joining me today. My hope is that you're feeling a little less alone and a little more seen. So until the next episode, you can find me on Instagram at fatjoy.life, on YouTube at youtube.com/@fatjoy, and on Substack at fatjoy.substack.com. And please do check out the episode notes for how you can connect with my amazing guest and for the links to the poem. All right, lovely, I am sending you off with my best wishes for an abundantly fat joy day, and we'll talk again soon.